What's up, Marlins fans, and welcome back to another episode of Swings and Mishes. I am your producer, Jeremy Taché, joined by Craig Mish. Mish, how you doing?
Doing well. It's we're getting down to the end here. We have a lot of exciting races in Major League Baseball, especially in the National League. Really hard to predict who's going to end up finishing things out. And then we have those juggernauts in the American League. And then, of course, we have the Marlins finishing out the season, too. So, look, I'm excited to kind of see the end of the season. I've been pretty honest on social media when it comes to September. I've worked with general managers in the past and currently. They all kind of tell me the same thing, is that when you get to the end of the season, a lot of these guys just want to end it. So I'm encouraged by some of the things that I'm seeing. Discouraged by a couple of things as well in terms of on the field. But honestly, I don't get too worked up about what I'm seeing right now. I think the end of the season will come soon enough, and then we will take a full view on the podcast as to what went right, what went wrong, and how we see the future. So that's kind of the way I'm viewing it right now.
Right, and the Marlins are ending the season a little bit differently in that most of the storylines aren't actually even necessarily on the field. Within the last few days, we saw a couple of managers let go at the minor league level, at the AAA and AA level, and some other changes made in coaching throughout the organization. And Craig, I just wonder if you think this is a reflection of where things could go throughout the organization or even at the coaching level up to the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see that happen. And it's not a big surprise because the Marlins didn't have a ton of time to do some self-analysis with the on-field product. They took the team over so late in 2017 and then all of a sudden just kind of had to get things going for the following year. So I don't blame them for not making any changes, but now they want to put their own stamp on the team. And so they let go of their AA coach and their AAA manager and coach. And, you know, Randy Reddy, somebody, a former big league player who I got to know a little bit through the year. So I was a little disappointed to see him gone, but also I understand that they're going to be making some changes. And so, yeah, I mean, Jeremy, you have to ask yourself at this point what will happen with the major league team. And here's kind of my assessment of it. I don't have the answers. I'm not sure. And I'm not going to sit here and throw the coaches all under the bus. But here is my take on what I think may happen. It doesn't matter at what level you're at and kind of where you are in a building or rebuilding process in the major league level or the minor league level. But the bottom line is that any team that's going to lose 100 games or close to 100 games, there are going to be changes. So I don't think that all of the coaching staff will be back for the Marlins in 2019. I just don't see it as being realistic. You have to do self-evaluation. And when you do and you look at the club, you're going to find some positives that happened this year. And then you're going to attach potentially some of those coaches to the positives. But the bottom line is that how far above the expectation did this coaching staff get those players to? And the answer is about what you thought that they would be. They're going to lose close to 100. Changes are going to be made. So nothing really would surprise me in the offseason except for if they brought back every single coach next year. And I don't know, and I won't speculate who those may be as of yet because I don't even know. But, Jeremy, when a team loses 100, you make changes. Maybe you don't make a ton of them. You make some. In terms of Don Mattingly, I believe he'll be back next year. He deserves, I think, another year to manage this team, to see where the growth is and where the improvement is. He's going to be managing a team of a lot of great players and all-stars in Japan this offseason. And I would like to see him be given another year. And obviously, I think that he will, because they wouldn't put him in the situation of going to Japan as the Marlins manager. And then all of a sudden he gets back and they say, oh, no more. Make any sense. I think that he's done a good job managing the personalities. I think he's done a good job managing the day-to-day of it. I think he's done a good job in-game as well. The bullpen, a little bit of a different situation. I'd like to see that cleaned up a little bit next year, either with a new coach or just a new process. I'm not in love with the way that was managed all season long. But beyond that, I would give a passing grade for sure to Mattingly, and I would expect that he will for sure be back in 2019.
Yeah, agreed on the Mattingly stance and the way that things need to change. And we've seen, you know, if you've been following the Marlins for a long time, you've seen changes sort of up and down the organization consistently, including on the television side. And one of the changes that was made was that Tommy Hutton was gone. But now Tommy Hutton is back with the Marlins on the broadcast team in the pre- and post-game shows. And we're going to have a conversation with Tommy Hutton coming up with you guys right now.
All right, Jeremy. Well, you know, it's another big weekend for college and pro football. Amazing games last week. And if you bet on sports, you have to sign up right now with BetDSI.com. They're matching your first deposit when you sign up using our promo code SWINGS101 up to $2,500. In fact, after we talk to Tommy Hutton, we're going to give away a pick for you this weekend that you can get down on and make some money. You guys know me. I love betting on college and pro football. And if you do, BetDSI.com is your spot. Great customer service, easy to use interface, and you can bet right on your phone. BetDSI.com. Use promo code SWINGS101. Don't forget, just a few minutes, we'll give you a pick that you can make money on this weekend. And when it comes to BetDSI, they have every wager that you could ever want or imagine. If it's happening, BetDSI has a line on it. NFL, NCAA football, baseball, NBA, UFC, even esports, and even bet on politics, celebrities, reality shows for that matter. That's BetDSI.com. Use promo code SWINGS101 and sign up today. And that's right, Jeremy. We are super excited to have our next guest here on Swings and Mishes. A lot of you know him as a broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. He has been with the club for 19 years, a little pause, and now he's back here for 2018. And, of course, played 12 years in the big leagues and really had a remarkable career, played with so many players and Hall of Famers. And I want to get to that also. I think there's so many great stories that he can tell, but it has been awesome to see him back on the field and in the press box. And Tommy Hutton, who you see now on Fox Sports Florida pregame, postgame, joins us here on Swings and Mishes. And Tommy, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Yeah, Craig, I'm doing fine. You said it. I had a little hiatus there for a couple of years. Got myself refreshed, and here I am back again.
Yeah, and obviously I think that's, you know, the most interesting part of this story, because I would say that in Marlins history, whether it's been radio or television, you have been the most popular broadcaster in franchise history. In fact, you were brought back on a day where the Marlins honored the 25th anniversary of the team, which I think came as a surprise to a lot of people. In fact, you know, when I was asking, because with me trying to get my information and get my scoops, I was told that the biggest story of who is going to be back for this anniversary may not be even a player. And that struck me as crazy. And then there you were in introducing and announcing. It must have been a little bit surreal for you. So if you wouldn't mind, Tommy, could you dive in as to how this all happened and how you got back in the game here?
Yeah, it was quite a shock, actually, because not being involved for a couple of years and basically leading a quote-unquote normal lifestyle with my family, with my wife and my two granddaughters, and my sons live in the area, and just doing things like that. It came out of the blue. There were a couple of things that early on, the first year that I was out, that I pursued, but nothing really materialized. And all of a sudden, I got a call out of the blue from the Marlins asking if I would like to get involved in the announcements of the reunion, the 25-year reunion, wanted to know if I could do the announcements from the field. And I thought that was nice, and I said, sure, I'd love to. I thought I'd get to see a bunch of guys that I saw over the years. And so one thing kind of led to the other. A couple of days later, I guess they had been in contact, Fox Sports Florida and the Marlins. A couple of days later, I got a call from Fox Sports Florida saying that they would like to get me back involved somehow, and I wasn't sure what they meant by that. And then they talked a little bit more. I had a couple of meetings, and I found out it was to get involved in some pre and post games. And because of my schedule, because this was like mid-May when this took place, so because of my schedule, I had already planned on a few things, because this was my third year now of not being involved in baseball. And so they said, well, you choose the dates that you would like to work, that you're able to work. So I was able to sit down and kind of put together a schedule, and I picked somewhere between 45 and 50 dates to be involved in the pre and post games, you know, obviously with Craig Minervini, who's a joy to work with. Mm-hmm. And most of them with Jeff Nelson, some with Gabby Sanchez, got some with Gabby coming up this weekend, actually. So it's been fun. It kind of got the juices going a little bit, and I've just enjoyed being involved in the game again.
Yeah, and being involved for 50 years as a player and a broadcaster, and all of a sudden that gap of not, and I do want to ask you about that because I've heard you talk about that a little bit. But my next question is kind of to me, Tommy. We talk to a lot of these young players, especially this year, Tommy, about the young players who get the call about getting called up and that what that was like. And here you are on the opposite spectrum, arguably, of your career, getting the late call. Once you got that call and the Marlins called you, and then you talked to your wife, and I know you have your kids and grandkids, and I know you're just so busy with all the things that you have going on in your life. What can you share that conversation, what it was like with your family to say, hey, guys, I got the call again. I may be going back and doing this again.
So my wife said, does that mean you're going to get out of the house a little bit more? you don't often get the call when you're 72 years old. So it was a nice feeling. I had, I'll be quite honest with you, a bad taste in my mouth the first year or so because of the way things all happened. I was disappointed. I was angry. You know, you go through the whole thing. And so it was nice to feel like somebody wanted you back to get involved again. And so that was a good feeling when I first heard that. So that's why it was fun to kind of put together the schedule. And it really hasn't affected our summer too much. So we'll see how things go beyond this year. I have to thank Jason Latimer with the Marlins. He was the first one who reached out to me about coming for the anniversary weekend. And I think that kind of helped get the ball rolling.
Yeah, and the Marlins brought back Teal. They brought back you, and it does seem like they're trying to find.
I was going
to
break out my Teal suit, but I didn't have one, so
that would have caught my eye. I know I put some pictures of you on Twitter when I saw you standing there in the dugout. That was a huge surprise. So I think that what this kind of leads me to is, look, you were so popular here as a broadcaster with Lynn Casper, and then of course with Rich Waltz, who's one of my favorites for many, many years. And I think that the reason why you were so popular with Marlins fans is because when they were winning, you were cheering. And when they were losing, you were very transparent with everything that was going on with the team. And in fact, there were so many times, Tommy, where the Tommy Hutton classic blowups would be over the umpires getting it wrong before they were replay. And so I would ask you now, coming back, because it does seem like you brought pretty much the same touch. But is that difficult as a broadcaster to kind of have to – you've never had to, but to have to watch your words, and you've been doing it for so many years, not just with the Marlins. I know you had previous experience also with ESPN and I believe the Yankees as well.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really sat up in the booth or now doing pre- and post-game shows and said to myself, boy, I really have to watch what I say. I always thought it was a compliment when a fan would come up to me and they'd go, oh man, last night you said exactly what I was thinking. That's exactly what I wanted to say. And I always thought that was a compliment. And I always felt bad when I would hear things written or things that were said when I was let go that people said, oh, well, he was negative. And I was never negative toward Marlins players. As you said, I wanted them to win. I was upset when they lost. And the bottom line is sometimes honesty is construed into negativity. And that's I guess, where that story ends.
Yeah, and it ended with, I know, you getting a phone call many years ago. And I, as part of this, Tommy, it's just kind of revisiting the history as to, how this happened. Of all the things that have been done, and as you know, the Marlins traded away a lot of players, but people kind of understood, at least some of them, in terms of the direction that the Marlins wanted to go now under the new ownership. But the previous ownership was the one that led to the decision. There was discussion that it was over a game, potentially you being too critical. And I know from at least the things that you have said and told people, you never got a real reason. Like, you never got a real, like, hey, this is specifically what we didn't like. This is what we didn't want you to do. And I can only imagine what that had to feel like for you, saying, gosh, like, at least tell me why.
Well, I know, and you're right. For a few months, I had that feeling. I certainly have gotten over that. That was all from the previous ownership. So, it's a new journey. It was funny when I was asked to get involved in the pre- and post-game shows by Brett Updike, executive producer with Fox Sports Florida. I said, Are you sure you want to hire me? I've never done this stuff before. I've never done pre and post game.
Right, true.
Because it is different than doing a game. And people have asked me about, are you going to have some rant? You know, I have some fun with it, but it's so much different than the spontaneity of doing a game. You know, when you're sitting up there for 3 hours doing a game and it's live, there's stuff that just happens. The pre and post game shows are pretty much mapped out, and we know ahead of time what we're going to talk about. So it's a little bit different then. I mean, if something comes up during a game that might tweak me a little bit, I may have some fun with it. But yeah, it's much different doing pre and post game shows than actual games.
Yeah, we're here with Tommy Hutton. He is broadcasting Marlins games again, pre and post game. Had a long career in Major League Baseball, which we're going to get to as well. Before we get to that, what do you think the future holds for you as far as broadcasting? Have you guys discussed anything? Do you feel like there's a good opportunity potentially to be back and doing this more in 2019? Because as you know, with the way that the Marlins season is kind of gone, it's now, at least for the most part, as much optimism as possible, getting to a point where the team is on the field and good again.
Yeah, I really haven't discussed it with anybody. I would certainly be open to being involved again. I think from what I've heard, I think everybody's fairly pleased with the way things have gone. And when the season ends, I'm probably just going to sit back. I'm not going to reach out. Hey, I've been on vacation for a long time, so I don't know if, and I'm sure I would never get involved in all 150, 162 games. At this point in time, that's just too many. And I enjoyed my time when I wasn't working. I enjoyed the things we did. So, but I certainly would be open to getting involved again. I really like the, and I can see the direction that the organization is going, and I really like it. I know it's frustrating for fans to get beaten, but then it's nice to see a game like last night and see Urania beat Jacob DeGrom. So there's some good things out there. I think the direction is in the right way. So it would be fun to be involved in that.
And Tommy, going off beat a little bit from the Marlins path here for a second, one of my personal greatest idols growing up was actually Gary Carter. In fact, his daughter Christy was my third grade teacher.
And she's Christy and my oldest son used to ride the bus to school together all the time.
Oh my God. Right. So I've seen how you and Gary were very close and in fact neighbors, as you just said, with riding the bus growing up. And I was wondering if you could just share maybe your best or your favorite Gary Carter story. I know he's one of the good guys in the history of baseball.
Well, you're absolutely right. We were very good friends for 30 years plus. Once we started out as teammates with the Montreal Expos, prior to that, when I was with the Phillies and he was with the Expos, he was one of those players. If you were on the other team, couldn't stand the guy. Look at this guy. What's he doing? And you can't have that much fun. You can't play that hard all the time. Anyway, fast forward, you become teammates, and all of a sudden you realize that's exactly the way he is, and that's the way he was. He was like that on the golf course. We played a lot of golf together, and I never hit the ball as far as him, and I wasn't as good a golfer as him. And so he'd have to give me strokes. It killed him for him to give me strokes. I said, kid, that's the way the game's played. If you're not that good, you've got to give the other guy, it killed him. How many Polly Pops am I going to give you today? And so he would have fun. He was competitive, even on the golf course. So we would have, and we had many great times out there.
Now, are you still on the DL with golf? I know in the you had mentioned that you had a...
Yeah, I'm getting close. Yeah, I'm okay. Getting close, coming back. But I have thought a couple of times, I've thought about this because over the last couple of years, I've gotten my handicap down a little better, close in the Gary Carter range. And so I thought about it at the time. You know what? He wouldn't have had to give me as many strokes. I don't know if I'd have liked that.
Right, right. And, you know, Tommy, it's so interesting to me when we see, players, executives, broadcasters who have been in the game, involved in the game for so long. And we'll touch on Marlins history here in a minute. I don't think people realize, Tommy, especially millennial types who have just seen you on TV, the career that you've had in the game, playing 12 years in the game, And me just going back from a historical perspective, it may not move the needle for some people listening digitally to a podcast, but Tommy, like, you played with Sandy Koufax and you played with Don Drysdale and Mike Schmidt and Steve Carlton. And as Jeremy mentioned, the players on the Expos in the Hawk and Gary Carter, like a wide spanning career.
And the Rock, Tim Raines.
And Tim Raines and Jim Bunning, I even see, like, all these Hall of Famers that you played with. And
well, some of those guys, yeah, some of those guys minimally, when I got called up by the Dodgers, I will tell you a great story. I've told it many times. The very first game I ever got in was, in 1966. I was 20 years old. I got called up in September and I got in to play one inning of defense at first base. And I got to play behind Sandy Koufax. It was a game at Dodger Stadium in LA, of course, 56,000 people there. And it was toward the end of the season, not knowing it was going to be his last season. And when the game ended, I'm in the locker room and I'm happy. I've got in my first major league game and I think I got a throw from Maury Wills at shortstop to make an out and to get a put out. And all of a sudden Koufax comes over to my locker and congratulates me for getting in my first major league game. Mm. And the amazing thing about that is I grew up in L.A. So I grew up seeing all these guys, Drysdale, Koufax, Johnny Roseboro, Willie Davis, Tommy Davis, Jim LaFever, all those guys. So to me, that was an unbelievable thrill.
I know you've talked about, and I've heard you tell stories about the characters of the game and the ones that you've played with. Is Lasorda the number one character? All time?
Yeah, Tommy is like my, he's my second father because Tommy signed me out of high school. He was just starting his career as a scout. And so back in 1964, he signed me. And I remember him telling, that was before the draft. So you had a couple of other teams interested and one of them was Boston. And I remember him telling my parents, do you want your son play? And we lived about 15 minutes from Dodger Stadium. He said, do you want your son playing all the way across the country in Massachusetts? Or do you want him playing right down the Pasadena Freeway at Dodger Stadium? You know, he was a salesman back then. And we had some great teams. We had a team, I believe it was 70 or 71, in Spokane, Washington, at AAA, the Coast League, which was voted a few years back the best minor league team of the century. We had Joe Ferguson was the catcher. I played first. Davey Lopes played second. Ron Say played third. Bobby Valentine played short. The outfield was Pishorek, Bill Buckner, and Von Joshua. So we had Lasorda didn't have to manage much. I don't think we had signs that year. He said, you're going to learn how to play the game, and you guys will know when to take a pitch, when to hit and run, when to do all that. If you show me otherwise, I'll give you signs. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, those Dodger teams, they just cultivate young players through the years. It's amazing we're talking about five decades of baseball, them continuing to do it and do it now. Circling back real quick, Tommy, before we end this, it is 25 years of the Marlins, and the story cannot be told with positive, with negative. There's just been so much, as the Marlins have said, it's a complicated history, and I think that's kind of fair. But for you as a broadcaster, in all the years that you've done this, and certainly now it's a completely new day with the ownership of Derek Jeter and things that are happening now. But the story that was told previously in your 19 years as a broadcaster, what kind of sticks out for you as really the most memorable moments that as Marlins fans that, you point to that is in your mind's eye or you consider when you think about the time that you broadcasted with the team?
Yeah, well, first of all, being a Marlins fan has the true fan, the ones who have stuck with it for a long time. They have had, as you well know, there are many ups and downs. I really tip my hat to the true Marlin fan. I would have to say in 97 when they won the World Series, that was my first year doing Marlins baseball. I worked with Dave O'Brien and Joe Angel on TV. And so everything to me was kind of new. And it was a great year. There's no question about that. Won the World Series. But I think the most memorable year would be 03, just with the way everything happened, off to a bad start. Jeff Torborg was the manager, and I had a good relationship with him because he had come up as a Dodger, so I used to see him all the time in spring training and knew him very well. And then he got let go, and in comes this old guy, Jack McKeon, and all the things, sudden things really turned around.
Yeah.
So that was the most memorable year, the World Series in 03.
And moving forward, Tommy, we know that, you know, kind of what the Marlins are up against at this point. They don't like to call it a rebuild. They've used the word build several times. You got to know Stanton. You got to know Ozuna, Yelich. You know, certainly those are the three main players they traded, and also D. Gordon. When you watch the team this year in 2018, what is kind of the takeaway from you? Have you seen a couple of positive signs from players that you think may have a future on this team when they are good in a couple of years?
Oh, without question. And I think we're seeing a little bit of it right now with a nice run that Lewis Brinson is on. He certainly has the talent. JT Realmuto is one of the best, one of the top three catchers in the league, if not in baseball. JT Riddle got some surprising power and really is a solid shortstop. And then I think we're seeing some guys getting opportunities. And I remember as I see some of these guys getting opportunities, and I think to myself, man, when I was coming up, every team I was on had a set lineup. We never got these opportunities. So guys will look back and they'll appreciate, getting a chance, whether they make the most of it or whether they fail, they're at least getting the opportunity.
All right. I got to end with this because so many people have asked me to ask you this question. Okay. This is not going to be your favorite one, but I got to ask it because people have asked me to ask it to you.
Do I have to answer?
You don't have to answer it, Tommy, but I got to ask it because people have asked me to ask it to you, and I try to do the best job I can making sure I do it. People have asked me in the future, Tommy, if one day, because obviously it was the wrong decision for you to be let go, and obviously it came from the highest end of Jeffrey Loria, who we have not heard from since he has sold the Marlins. But if one
nor,
day...
Nor have I. Nor well, have I.
Okay, but if one day, Tommy, you know, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you come face-to-face with him, and he decides at that point, hey, Tommy, look, you know, I'm sorry, made the wrong call there. Obviously, everybody knows it was the wrong call. It was the wrong decision. Would you accept an apology at that point? Do you think you ever could have a relationship with a guy that you had a good relationship, I think, for at least a few years during your term with the first term with the Marlins?
Yeah, I did. I did have a good relationship. And yes, I would. I'm not a vindictive person. All is past. It would be forgiven. I have no animosity toward that group. So yeah, I would, without question.
Awesome. Tommy, listen, congratulations on being back. We look forward to seeing you on television again next year. It is not a Marlins game without you being
on
the
broadcast.
Done.
Hey, babe, Craig, we're not done this year. I've got about, I was just looking at my schedule. I got about 13, 14, 15 more pre and post games.
Okay, so there you go. We'll catch you this year. We'll catch you next year. But again, I think the story is not completely written here with you. We look forward to seeing you the rest of this season on television. And then I'm going to hope that we get to see you next year as well, because we'll do this again. We'll share some more stories and have some fun, because, you know, honestly, Tommy, in the history of the Marlins, there hasn't been anybody like you. Thanks so much for doing
hey,
this.
Hey, well, Craig, I appreciate it. And if anything, I'll see you in the press box.
That's for sure. Thank you so much, Tommy. Thanks for coming on.
All right.
Well, as promised, it's time now to give a pick out that you can actually win on BetDSI.com. I figured why not bring in one of the best in the business from BlowoutPicks.com. Jamie Heath is the vice president. And as soon as this segment is over, you need to call 800-501-3500. They had a huge week in both college and pro football last week. Jamie, thanks so much for making a few minutes for me here on the show today.
You're right, Craig. We went 7-1 this past Saturday in college football, and we had a great NFL weekend, including the Monday night two games. We went 2-0 on those Monday night games. We're on complete fire, Craig. Let me just tell you, we're just and we have a great weekend coming up.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the picks are going to be this weekend. You need to call 800-501-3500 to get in on those. Tough one to call this week, Jamie, with the Dolphins and Jets. The Jets coming off that big win. That line was about a pick 'em. Now it's up to -3. Dolphins and Jets this weekend. Who do you like?
Well, first off, let me just tell you, the Jets look amazing on all facets of their game. They, all three phases of the game, they completely dominated the Lions. But I just want to say another thing. There's always overreaction when it comes to situations like this. It was a Monday night game. The whole entire country was watching it. And the Sam Darnold's very first pass was an interception, return for a touchdown, a pick six. And right away, everyone was like, oh, my God, another bad season for the Jets. And he really showed some amazing composure. I was really, really impressed with the way he looked. Turning our attention to the Dolphins, they had a game that lasted about 8 hours. There was two weather delays in the game. They did beat Tennessee. They also looked good. The line went, like you said, went from Dolphins favored by 1.5 to now the Jets are favored by 3. All the money's going on the Jets. This is actually a meaningful game for a change, because in the last 4 or 5 years, this game's pretty much meant nothing, because usually they play midseason and the Patriots are usually 2-3 games ahead in their division. I have a slight lean towards the Jets in this game, only because they're home and it's Sam Darnold's first game, and they did look really, really good this on Monday night. But it's really not one of my strong plays. Like I was telling you this weekend, I have monster plays this weekend coming up.
All right, you got to call to get those plays. 800-501-3500. Jamie Heath, Vice President of BlowoutPicks.com. Give him a call now, and don't forget to bet those games over at BetDSI.com.
Thank you to Tommy Hutton for speaking with us. And, you know, Craig, I'm wondering what your main takeaways from that were in our conversation with Tommy.
Yeah, I think that Tommy Hutton is not going to hold grudges. He's never been that kind of guy. I know that personally that when he got the news, and I think the timing was awful too. It may have been right around, the holiday time of when that happened. I remember it's very rare that I remember moments, but it just came such as a shock to me. I was at a bowling alley, and it was, I believe, Lamar Miller, who used to be the running back of the Dolphins. It was his charity event. I was emceeing it. And somebody had come up to me and said, hey, I don't know if you know this, but the Marlins just let go of Tommy Hutton. And I'm like, what? Like, how is that even possible? It just and like, it was kind of like December or January. It felt like, no way. Like, this is not the kind of decision you make now. But yeah, it happened. And at the time, I felt bad. And I know that he had a period of time where he did too, just not trying to get, trying to get answers. But listen, Tommy's been around the game a long time. And it is so nice to see him during batting practice in the press box, sharing his opinions, his thoughts. And I got to say that of all the things that the Marlins have done, and they've done some nice things, people have asked me, oh, give me the tangible things that they've done on the field. Look, we know it hasn't been a great year. There's no sugarcoating it. But some of the things that they have brought back from their past, the teal, obviously, with the uniforms, people have been a fan of. But you bring Tommy Hutton back and you let him work on TV and you let him say whatever he wants. Yeah, I'm just not a fan of Homer TV and radio. I you got to lean toward the home team. You got to get your fans excited about the home team. But you also have to do a professional broadcast. And Tommy does a professional pre and post game. If they lose, he's not going to say they did great. It's just ridiculous. Right. We're all watching at home thinking the same thing. That day and age is gone. You got to call it honestly. It's why the Mets, as good or as bad as they are, have one of the best broadcasts in the game, because they understand the on-field product. Sometimes it's good, and they root for them when it's good, and when it's bad, they call them out, and that's just, the way that life is. Mm-hmm. I like transparency in terms of that. So, yes, Jeremy, it is great to see Tommy back, and as he said, hopefully in 2019, he'll have some more work with the club.
All right. Well, and one of the things that with the franchise that people have enjoyed most is having it actually feel like a franchise, where there's a little bit of paying homage to the past of the franchise,
yeah,
which has never been the case with the Marlins ever, with the amount of teardowns and rebuilds or quote unquote builds. The on the field product hasn't been that way. So it's nice to at least see some of the off the field product. So yesterday a few days ago, Greg, mm-hmm. you tweeted out asking if anyone had any questions for the podcast this week. And so before we get to the questions specifically from our listeners, I had a question for you myself.
Sure.
Put that out there. Is I'm wondering if there are any coaches specifically, we talked about coaching in the first segment of the podcast, if there are any coaches specifically that you think that the Marlins might try to target this upcoming offseason?
Yeah, it's a question that I think that is going to pop up a lot because it's part of their development now, and making the assumption that both Gary Denbow and Mike Hill, and specifically Gary Denbow in the development point of it, because again, Mike Hill as the president of baseball operations of the big league club is managing the day-to-day of the big league club and heavy involvement in the minor leagues as well. But Gary Denbow is now, you know, the director and the vice president and managing everything going on down there. I feel like it's going to be his decision to bring that to the president, Derek Jeter, who will make the final decision there. So it is natural at this point, Jeremy, to start scouring all the Yankee minor league system and see, okay, who do they have there that they may want? Because again, I think that's the direction they're going to go. The one name that I find interesting, because he had a ton of big league experience, and I had a chance to actually cover him as a player with the Pirates, and now is the manager of the Yankees double-A team in Trenton, is Jay Bell. Jay Bell was also a bench coach for the Reds a few years ago. I don't know that he got a fair shake there. The Reds haven't been good in a long time. He managed that team in Trenton this year. They had a phenomenal season, phenomenal regular season, and he also managed in the Arizona Fall League. I don't know with factual evidence that this is someone that the Marlins are going to call or going to ask to get a job, whether it's at the big league level or at the minor league level, but it would serve the Marlins to kick the tires there because he's a big league player with professional experience. He's done a very good job at the minor league level. He's a former player, also, you know, has skill in terms of day-to-day with managing people as the bench coach, as he was with the Reds. He was known as a fantastic player, as one of the best bunters of all time, ironically. This isn't a game that you see guys bunting a lot in. But, you know, obviously the track record of him speaks for itself, and he's somebody in the Yankee system. So, again, I'm not saying that with any knowledge or saying that I know that they're going to get him, but they do have a opening in Double-A. They do have an opening in Triple-A, and I believe there will be some openings on the big league team as well. So that would be a name that I would circle, and Yankees could easily, Jeremy, go to him and say, hey, we're going to pay you more money to stay. We want to keep you here. I don't know. I don't know that that's going to be the case. But here's what we do know, Jeremy. Yankees aren't going to have a managerial opening for a long time. Aaron Boone's going to stay there. So right. If you are in the Yankee system and you're looking at it, you probably have to be saying to yourself, where is my best path to get a higher position up? And I would say there's a chance it's with the Marlins and not with the Yankees.
I'm not going to say the name Jay Bell rings a bell. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to make that joke. That's not what's going to happen.
He was
here.
A good player for a very long time. And you know, that's a guess for me. That's not something with factual evidence. But if you look at his track record as to what he's accomplished in the minors this year, in addition to having experience in the Arizona Fall League, and I know the Marlins, that's important to them as well. They're going to be sending a lot of players there as well. It's just a name in the back of your mind to keep an eye on.
It's definitely an interesting one, Craig. And so moving on to some of the questions that were asked to us on Twitter, I'm just going to kind of go through some of them here. The first one being, and I apologize to anyone if I butcher your names or your Twitter handles, but this is at Poldy Anslinger. The first question that he asked was, will the Marlins sign Victor Mesa? In your opinion, Craig?
I think they have a really good shot at him. I'm still waiting to find out when he's going to be declared a free agent. We're not at the point, at least according to the people close to him, where they feel like this has dragged. I think we're still in that range of it's taking, you know, the due process time. The other part of what's going on here, Jeremy, is that even if the Marlins were to sign him, where would he go? There's nowhere for him to play right now. So you're looking at a full 2019 minor league season for Victor Mesa. Wherever he ends up, he's not going to be in the major leagues. He's going to be in the minors. He just didn't get a chance to play any minor league ball because he wasn't declared. I think the Marlins are the favorites to sign him. Of course, we had the report a couple of months ago from Emily Walden of The Athletic saying that the Orioles were going to sign him. I had asked. I had heard the Orioles were very confident, too. I think it's between those two teams. So I can't say with certainty that the Marlins are going to sign him, but certainly, Jeremy, they feel very confident.
And he would be a huge prospect to add to the mix. And speaking of those prospects, a question from at DJ Goldman, that's Dylan Goldman. Which player down on the farm are you most excited about, Craig?
Well, at this point, what the Marlins have done is they have at least pseudo stockpiled some arms that are viable And I'm not saying that they have any aces there. We just don't know that yet. I'm not going to tab Sandy Alcantara as an ace after only making two big league starts. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anyone on their current 40-man or even in the minors that has the makings of an ace. I see a lot of twos and some threes and some fours and some fives, but I don't see a number one type guy. But enough to get them through this building process for the next couple of years. Ironically, I didn't think they had any pitching going into the season. And look, they actually do have some. What they don't have, Jeremy, is they don't have any clear-cut superstar-type bats. Like, I don't see any of them there.
Right.
And by losing Dietrich in the offseason, which they will, and they should, and Justin Bour, who they traded, they just don't have any power threats outside of their catcher, who really maybe in another park could hit 30 home runs, but I don't think that he's a 30-home-run type guy. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at Devers in the minor leagues, a young player, an infielder that they got in the trade in the offseason as a possibility there. You know, I'm excited to see what Will Banfield could end up being. But unfortunately, Jeremy, my interests lie with all of the players who they just acquired in the draft or recently. You know, I'd like to say that eventually that Monte Harrison will be a star in the big. I just can't say that. I don't know that. And the evidence from 2018 would not point to that after you strike out 200 plus times at a higher level of minor league baseball. But again, remains to be seen. I would say that I don't have anyone in terms of specifically, but as a group, it would be all of the players that they drafted mm-hmm. or at the very low levels, because I haven't seen anything that would point to me to a star type offensive player as of yet.
And that's why Marlins fans have to be comfortable with this rebuild.
And patient.
Yes. Patient. Patience is the key. We've talked about at least. We've talked
about the White Sox, Jeremy. Look at the White Sox, right? Like, that's like everyone just wants to point to all the rebuilds that have gone perfectly, like Chicago and Houston. Like, how do White Sox fans feel right now losing Michael Kopech for a year?
Ugh.
Like, that's a team that could be bad, Jeremy, for another 2 or 3 years. And that's when I'm not saying that it's not going well for the White Sox, but do they look like a team that after 3 years is going to win 85 games next year? I don't see that. And there is a chance that in 2020, the Marlins could be sitting in the situation of the White Sox and still, you know, losing 90, 100 games. So, and I'm fine with that, by the way, but you have, there just has to be patience and understand that what we're going to be looking at next year is probably going to resemble a lot of what we saw this year. And then you have to hope that in 2020, with Prado and Chen coming off the books, that at that point they're able to at least reinvest some of the money in their own players and maybe some guys outside of the organization. But we have to eliminate 2019 from that conversation.
And there were so many people that were out there trying to buck the curve and pick the White Sox as their trendy division winner. And now look where the White Sox are. And
another
they
year.
Kopech. Ugh.
Yeah, not good.
It's a shame for them. And Kopech being gone, it's you know, sort of a what if for them in terms of how they're building. And so a question from one of our listeners. This is from Russ Quinoa, is how I'm going to go ahead and pronounce that one, at Russell Quinoa. What's the greatest what if?
Jose Fernandez passing away.
Of course.
I mean, there's just nothing touches that. Mm-hmm. That's number one, and there's not even a number two.
Right.
And in fact, I think that we'll do some sort of podcast on the day of the anniversary of him passing, where we'll maybe dive more into that. I'm working on that right now. But look, I mean, there's what if they'd have traded Yelich, whatever. Look, I mean, the deal right now looks bad, but in 2 years, maybe it'll look good. I understand why they moved Stanton. I understand why they moved Gordon. I understand why they moved Ozuna. They traded young players in the Cashner deal that we may not like. They traded Luis Castillo, who has not had a good year, but maybe in the future. There's a million what ifs. And Trevor Williams, I mean, there's too many to even count. But the one overlying factor of this whole entire franchise is the fact of what if Jose Fernandez doesn't pass away? What happens? Mm. Does Jeffrey Loria still own this team? I think there's a chance of that. I do. I mean, I think there's a chance last year, 2017, with him, they have a chance to win the World Series. I feel that way. I do.
Mm.
It just was an altering franchise deal. We'll never know, but that goes as number one, and there's not a number two.
Right. And definitely not sort of the on the field of the Yelich or the Stan, where those things can pan out in a different way. That's it. And you know,
it's the 25 year history. Look, we'll never know if they would have won the World Series in 98 after dismantling in 97. Right. Everyone says they dismantled the team in 2004. They did not. The Pudge Rodriguez signed with Detroit. Derek Lee was traded. Okay, that's it. They brought back a lot of the guys that were still there. They didn't perform as well. And that's
right. That was a gradual.
Yeah, it wasn't the same. And we don't know, but we do know that Jose Fernandez would have been one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. And the biggest what if is, what if he didn't pass away tragically? Would in 2017, they had a chance to compete? Would they still all be together with this team? Maybe in 2018, but what if? We'll never know.
Right. And moving to the last question here from one of our listeners. This is from Jake Dubin, at Jake Dubin. His question is, am I wrong in kind of wishing we would tank the rest of the season to get the highest possible draft pick?
Every morning I wake up and I look at how close the Marlins are to that third pick. So you can't root against losses, but I get what Jake is saying because that's what I'm doing. And when I see now, the Marlins have moved ahead of the White Sox, and they've lost, I think, four in a row or five in a row. I don't think there's a huge difference between drafting third or fourth or fourth or fifth, and they're not going to pick first or second because that's locked in with Baltimore and Kansas City. But, Jeremy, there is a difference between third and sixth. Mm-hmm. There is a difference, okay? It's the sixth pick in the first round, the sixth pick in the second round, and so on and so forth. And I don't advocate tanking, but there it is significant, you know, picking four down from where you could.
Right.
And especially in this upcoming draft where there are some huge names in that first round. So, the Marlins are going to play. They're going to play hard. They're going to try to win games. I don't think there's anything wrong with losing at this stage. Mm-hmm. You're not losing to try and lose. But if they do, I am not upset at all. It's perfectly fine with me. And hopefully they pick third, fourth, or even fifth. But, man, all of this losing to only pick sixth after all of this, it would be – I hate to say it, it would be a little disappointing.
It would be almost a waste of such a losing season. I actually – you know, and I agree with you, the biggest thing is actually not even necessarily about the first round as much as it is throughout the rest of the draft.
Every pick. It's like the NFL. If you're going to be bad, you may as well be really bad.
You might as well be the worst you could be.
And baseball's different, and I get that, and they're going to overpay for some guys over their slot money, which they did, like, with Banfield this past year, and so they can get guys later on. It's not quite the same – as the NFL draft, but again, they performed above what experts said. And to me, seeing that they were better than Kansas City and better than Baltimore, I mean, fantastic. Like, I'll give them all high fives for that. But at that point, I think I want to stop. At that point, I think I want that third pick or that fourth pick, you know, but now we're teetering on so many teams being so close. But look, they're always going to say the right thing, which is we want to play. We'll worry about the draft when the draft comes. It doesn't matter if we pick third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. But I think that most experts would say there may not be a huge difference between picking third or fourth. But yes, when you're talking about sixth or maybe even seventh, I see as a possibility, depending on a couple other teams. Detroit, I know, is involved in that. Mm-hmm. Let's just say this to Jake's answer. There's nothing wrong with waking up in the morning and seeing them picking third or fourth and going, yes.
It's almost like rooting against your favorite football team because you have someone on the other team going against them in fantasy. It feels like that same type of emotion. All right, Craig. Well, that was the fourth episode of Swings and Mishes. Thank you to Tommy Hutton for joining us. As you guys go into your weekend, remember to use BetDSI with the promo code SWINGS101. And Craig, anything you want to say as we wrap up here?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to closing out this season. We'll do a few more as we wrap up in September. We'll do a postseason preview. We'll discuss the Marlins a little bit in the Arizona Fall League. And then in the month of October, we'll focus on what the Marlins end up doing in terms of changing up the franchise, which I think they'll do immediately after the season. So we'll cover that heavily. And then we'll run through the World Series and take a break until the winter meetings.
Yes, sir. Sounds like a plan. Thank you to everyone for listening. Be sure to rate us 5 stars on whatever app you're listening. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you get the latest updates and follow us on Twitter @SwingsAndMishes. Thanks to everyone for listening.